Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So the breaking news that I referred to before the break is tantalizing, but there aren't many details. But here's how tantalizing it is. Prosecutors say that Paul Manafort, pleading guilty today, has agreed to cooperate with Robert Mueller. Paul Manafort, who has been such a staunch ally of Donald Trump and vice versa, we don't know in what way he's going to cooperate. We don't know if or what he would say about the criminal activities, potentially, of anything that Donald Trump may have done, but tantalizing. And Mr. President and everybody else in the United States, fasten your seatbelts to see what comes next, with prosecutors announcing today that Paul Manafort has reached a plea deal that includes cooperation with the special counsel's office that just in. Now, beginning 100 years ago this week, there was a 1918 flu pandemic that claimed the lives of upwards of 50 million people worldwide, including 30,000 in New York City. It's with the centennial of that health crisis in mind that the Museum of the City of New York opens its newest exhibition, Germ City, Microbes and the Metropolis, opening today. It explores the threat of infectious disease in a metropolis, including challenges, containment, and care from both a historical and contemporary context, with artifacts, scientific models, and artwork on display. With me now is Rebecca Jacobs, co-curator of the exhibit, again, Germ City, Microbes and the Metropolis, at the Museum of the City of New York. And with her, we also have WNYC reporter Amanda Aronchik. WNYC and Germ City are collaborating, and our newsroom will be putting out a story a month inspired by the exhibit. So, Rebecca Jacobs, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
And hi, Amanda.
Hey there, Brian.
And let's look back 100 years to this flu epidemic, pandemic. WNYC just put out a story about the controversy over whether the pandemic was handled correctly. What was the issue?
Well, there was a great story that was put out by reporter Jim O'Grady yesterday, and he looked back at how New York had done. And one of the interesting things about 1918 is that even though it is history, it is still debated to this day what happened, you know, what worked, what didn't work. I would say that New York had been used to dealing with pandemics and outbreaks for many years already. They'd seen a lot of tuberculosis, and so it was a city that was kind of ready to deal with a flu pandemic in some ways. I would say the negative things were the news that you see in the newspaper at first was like, we got this, there's nothing wrong, it's fine. And then later it started to get a little bit more like, oh, wait, there is something really terrible happening. So there were mixed messages sent, but I think at the end of the day, New York suffered way less losses than other cities on the East Coast, than Philadelphia, than Boston. And so I think generally people think that New York did a pretty good job.
And on one level, Rebecca, this new exhibit is all about how microbes live among us and how New Yorkers have dealt with them over the decades and over the centuries. I couldn't help but notice that as you go through the exhibit, the displays are not in chronological order. Instead, the show is set up in categories: containment, investigation, care, and the urban environment. Why is this the best way to tell the story of infectious disease in New York?
Well, we worked closely with the Wellcome Trust on the show as part of a larger umbrella project called Contagious Cities. And we also worked with the New York Academy of Medicine to co-curate it. And in our discussions, we realized epidemics sound intimidating. They can be scary to people. But we wanted to organize the content in a way that would be thought-provoking to visitors and to really allow them to engage with it on a personal level. And so we thought having historical artifacts, artworks, and scientific models together would allow people to really feel something and understand the stories behind disease.
And it's really interesting because each of these categories says something about New York and infectious disease, how disease is treated, but it also reveals how people were treated in a larger sense in different time periods. For example, in the section on containment, we see how sick immigrants were treated, and that, Amanda, reveals a larger bias against them. Can you talk about that? Or maybe this is more for you, Rebecca. Talk about the artifacts that you displayed to make that point, or either of you.
Well, we are really interested in the ways in which history keeps repeating in terms of containment and biases against immigrants in the 19th century, fears around HIV in the 1980s through the present, and Ebola, Zika, ongoing fears. So one thing we found interesting was the trachoma inspections on Ellis Island, especially were about targeting Jewish immigrants and fears that they would be bringing trachoma, when in fact trachoma was endemic to the United States. And then we similarly have objects about HIV and AIDS and the quarantining of gay men's blood through an artwork by Jordan Eagles called Blood Mirror that's about the FDA ban on gay and bisexual men donating blood unless they've been celibate for a year to this day. So we're juxtaposing historical artifacts with contemporary artworks in order to provoke that kind of thinking about how much have we done better.
Listeners, maybe you have or had an ancestor who was affected by the 1918 flu pandemic, or maybe you want to say or ask anything else about germs in the city. Any germaphobes out there like Donald Trump? Microbes in the Metropolis, Germ City, Microbes in the Metropolis is the new exhibition at the Museum of the City of New York, 212-433-WNYC. For Rebecca Jacobs, co-curator, and WNYC's Amanda Aronchik, as WNYC is producing a series of stories in conjunction with this. Amanda, what's the big picture of what the station is doing?
Well, I think I was inspired by what the exhibit's doing, where they're thinking about it thematically. So when you start to look at it, instead of being like, oh, we're going to look at yellow fever, or we're going to look at these specific things, you think about all of the ideas that have come up. So we are looking at quarantining, and we're looking at the, you know, biases that are built in. We're looking at travel bans, which all of a sudden became news again a couple of weeks ago when that plane landed at JFK. You know, and many of the people on those planes were not in fact sick, but they got sick just by the idea of people around them coughing and sneezing. So that seems to last forever. You know, that's a perennial that comes up again. We're also going to be looking at preparedness. You know, what does New York City do to prepare for these kinds of things? What does the United States do to prepare? And I'm trying to think, what else are we tackling? I guess, you know, I would say one of the big things is that people never really talk about these issues when there's nothing happening. So it's kind of interesting to take a pause and look back at Ebola, look back at Zika, and just sort of think, well, what happened? What really happened? And can we talk about it in a calm way without freaking out?
Another section in the exhibition, as we said, has to do with investigation, how everyday New Yorkers, scientists, and doctors have sought to improve understanding about the disease, about disease in general. And in that section, again, you reveal how data can be skewed due to bias, even when the goal is noble. Can you give us an example of that, Rebecca?
Sure. So again, we pair a 19th century object with a 20th century one in our discussion of that. We have two charts that look very scientific, one about lung blocks from the 19th, early 20th century. They were so-called lung blocks because they were places where tuberculosis rates were very high. And the ways in which they were studied were biased in thinking basically the immigrant population and African-American population that tended to live in those spaces were sort of associated with the disease in a way in order to justify demolishing tenement houses. And when this happened, people were actually displaced and not necessarily helped, and they were targeted. And similarly, we have an object around the patient zero story of Gaetan Dugas, the flight attendant who was blamed for spreading HIV to the United States, when in fact, it's likely more recently scientists found out that it spread as early as the 1970s, and he certainly wasn't the only carrier. So it's a way of looking at science is flawed, can be conducted in a way that's flawed when people are biased.
Alice in Valley Stream, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alice.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I listen to you all the time, and I'm finding all of your talk about the flu pandemic in 1918 very interesting. I just wanted to add that I recently found out that my grandmother, Sarah, who lived in Kowel, Poland, died in 1918, and then, you know, it clicked in my head that she must have died in the flu pandemic. So I'm writing a novel, and I'm going to have a young lady that's going to live through the pandemic, partly in her honor. So I just wanted to say that. And again, it's been very interesting the last couple of days, the talks about the flu pandemic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Lorraine in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, this is Lorraine, and thank you for hosting this. My great-grandmother died in this epidemic, and she left four children, and my great-grandfather could not handle it. Eventually got married again, and his next wife also died in another flu epidemic. So there were six children that eventually all went to an orphan home at the time, and my grandfather said that it was a very rough home. There were many other boys who were sent there for the same reason, because there are a lot of mothers dying in this epidemic. So fortunately today I've had flus and we have antibiotics and I'm still on this planet. So I think that was probably part of it. They had no treatment when they got flus and they were living on the Lower East Side where they're very crowded and it just spread.
Lorraine, thank you very much. Is her epidemiology accurate? People living in crowded conditions and there weren't the treatments for the flu that there are today?
Certainly, and we saw that especially in the 19th century with cholera and yellow fever. All that could be provided for people sometimes was care.
Right? Care and water.
Care and water. It's you know, it's funny, Amanda, when we talk about the flu pandemic of 1918, and there are books that come out these days that warn us of the next coming, you know, germ plague or whatever it is because of the way we live these days and everything else. And at the same time, there are these scares that are crazy out of control and reflect bias and over fear, like you mentioned Ebola and Zika, and even the way people reacted to HIV in particular cases. So it's like, am I supposed to be more afraid or am I supposed to be less afraid?
I know, it is so confusing. I think that's actually why it's interesting to talk about when we're not in the middle of a huge outbreak. So Ebola was never going to be a public threat to Americans. It just wasn't going to be that. But we get so ramped up, and we've all seen Contagion, and we've seen all these movies, and I think people have a really tough time sorting out what the threat actually is. But different diseases are contagious in very different ways. And so it's sort of the onus is on us to kind of explain to people, you know, you don't need to worry about Ebola, but you do need to wash your hands. And when you have the flu, you should stay home. And I think just trying to figure out what your behavior is in a calm moment is helpful. And I think it's on us as journalists is also to try to explain things clearly.
Susan in the Village, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi. I was at the opening last night, and I just want to say it's an absolutely brilliant exhibit, and I'm definitely coming back because you couldn't spend as much time as you wanted to. It was very crowded. I just can't recommend it too highly. Seeing the iron lung, seeing the model of the face with smallpox, the ledgers, the old ledgers of death reports. It was just fascinating, beginning to end.
Thank you very much. Full-throated and 5 stars from Susan in the Village. One more, Meg in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Meg.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to mention, kind of remember women back in that epidemic or pandemic. My mother's father died, and she was just born, and she had a little older sister. So my grandmother was left alone with basically no money. He talks about going to the Catholic Church and how they turned her away. Ultimately, like many women did back then, she married someone else, had a few more children. He was an alcoholic. But my point is, I think it's important to remember that we didn't have the kind of welfare systems or things that women or anyone could go to back then, and the kind of things that women had to turn to in order to be able to maintain and, you know, feed their children.
Thank you very much for that. We've just got a minute left. Rebecca, is New York City prepared for the next epidemic? Whatever it is, do you come to a conclusion after studying this 100 years of history? Are there ways that the city is preparing that maybe we don't even know about?
Well,
or Amanda?
Do you think I should take this one, Rebecca?
I can start it, and then you can jump in.
Go for it.
Well, I'm inspired by what I learned from seeing what Bellevue Hospital's special pathogens unit is doing to prepare for not only Ebola, but other special pathogens. They work through a very elaborate procedure system to make sure their staff are safe, to make sure transmissions are minimized. So hospitals are inspiring. I also was really interested to learn about the Department of Health's points of dispensing system for emergency preparedness so that they could quickly dispense vaccines in some kind of emergency. So I'm sure there are ways in which, you know, I didn't know until I worked on this show.
About 20 seconds, Amanda?
I guess New Yorkers would be happy to know that there are people who think about this all the time, and all they do is game plan, what are we going to do during the next emergency? So I think we are pretty ready.
And we are ready to send a lot of people to see this exhibit. So Rebecca, just tell people where and how.
Come to the Museum of the City of New York. We open today, and the exhibition will be up through April 28th, 2019.
Rebecca Jacobs, co-curator of the exhibit Germ City, Microbes, and the Metropolis at the Museum of the City of New York, and WNYC reporter Amanda Aronchik. Look for our related pieces over the coming months. Thank you both.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.